they executed a coup against, a political coup against the only prime minister that was actually working for the British people since like Margaret Thatcher. Really? Okay, fine. You want to believe that those two things that there's no correlation, there's no causality with that correlation? Be my guest. You know, continue to eat crayons. I don't give a shit. That's obvious. Now,
sorry. Go ahead.
So, dude, the comedy's not good, but it's free, right? That's not just that. To destroy the Democratic Party in New York is what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And if you don't think that these people are so vindictive that they wouldn't put, look, George, we know that Alexander Soros and company put tens of millions of dollars into Mondanz. We know this. If you don't think for a minute that Soros and company didn't run Mondani in New York in order to take and destroy Trump's beloved New York City, because remember, where's Trump from?
Yeah.
Queens. Yeah. Right. What is one of Trump's biggest faults as a human being? He's from Queens and not from Manhattan. He's not from Manhattan.
Tom Luongo, Gold, Goats, and Guns. Good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
How are you, Andy? Well, it's good to talk to you again. Sorry we couldn't like make this work last week, but you know, my life was just not good last week. So there we are.
Well, hopefully it's better this week. So I want to get into. So I'm reading, and I get this really just from Legacy News, if you would, but a lot of deals are being struck. With the Trump administration, whether it's a deal with foreign governments, that can be in Southeast Asia, that could be with China, that could be anywhere really. But I just the list is too big to go down. But I want you to comment what is going on about that, and then let's talk about. And this really fits in your thesis really well, like all of it.
Right.
Let's talk about. Dollarization as the great Steve Hanke talked about on my show. So
you and I talked about this. I guess that was the inciting incident for when we wanted to get together. I think it's pretty obvious that the Trump administration is not de-dollarizing. I think as Brent Johnson pointed out earlier in the year when he was on my show and he was tweeting about this earlier in the year, and he said, you know, when the dollar is, U.S. dollar index is falling, that's re-dollarization. And when the U.S. dollar is rising, that's de-dollarization. Because, you know, when the dollar is strong, then people are going to try and figure out other ways to use other currencies in the dollar. And this is very simple in that respect. And I give Brent a lot of credit for, like, trying to popularize that idea, because I think it's a fair one. You know, it's pretty obvious that what they're trying to do is set the dollar up in the future as, you know, How do I put it? They want a cheap domestic dollar and they want an expensive foreign dollar, right?
That's a good way to put
they,
it.
And they don't necessarily mean that they want the foreign dollar to be so expensive that it's not used, right? They want it to be more predictable, that it's worth using, that it's a high exchange rate but a low friction cost. Let's put it that way, right?
Okay.
So, because that's been the dollar strength, right? The dollar strength is, for all these years, is the quote unquote global reserve currency and or the global trade currency, has been that it didn't cost a lot of money to use dollars because everybody had them, right? But it also created the euro dollar system, which then hijacked our monetary policy, right? So, and that would be the old LIBOR standard. Now we're on SOFR. Now we're still, you know, 3.75% after all of this, you know, these shenanigans, and somehow the United States economy is still, you know, surviving, and everybody else's economies are still tied to the health of the U.S. economy. This is not to say that it's that to the same extent that it was previous to this. Obviously, the rise of China as an antipode is, you know, part of the process. But I find it really interesting. I was talking to Vince Lanchi the other day on a podcast that I haven't put out yet, and only because I'm just so freaking busy. I'll try and get it out.
My viewers and listeners, tune into that podcast. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can tell you this right now. Absolutely. Because Vince identified, and I'm going to give the pre-roll here, but this is all Vince. It'll be out. It should be out tomorrow. I'm going to try and get it out tomorrow morning. Identified the new triangle trade of how to re-dollarize. And it has to do with gold, and it has to do with the yuan, and it has to do with the Russian ruble. I've been saying for a long time now that people still need to stop thinking in terms of BRICS. BRICS was a creation at best by the Russians and the Chinese. And really, the other countries don't matter. Now, I'm sorry, no offense to the Indians in the audience, even though you all know I hate you. That really, it's the Russians and the Chinese were forced into creating an antipode to the dollar when the dollar and the United States were fully integrated with the Western extraction colonial system of the old Eurodollar system, as run by the BIS, the IMF, then the City of London, Davos, all that shit, right? And so that's no longer necessary, but it is there as their hedge in case the United States falls, right, back into this orbit. But it's clearly what Trump is trying to do is move us out of that orbit. There's no question about that. And the immense raft of shit that is flowing out of the commentariat, the MAGA is dead, Trump's not, America First anymore. Nick Fuentes is now America is now the, the voice of America First, which is just the dumbest shit I think I've heard since New Coke, maybe. And actually, New Coke wasn't all that bad. That's the funny part about it.
Neither is
So,
Nick Fuentes, but anyways, go
yeah,
ahead.
yes. No, Nick Fuentes is the freaking Joker, man. I'm sorry. That's what I think.
Right.
And I will go to my grave on that one. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and that's fine. I don't care.
Anyways, but go ahead.
No, it's very important. Do you understand that that's all part of the psyop of what we're dealing with right now as Trump wins the shutdown, which was done in order to create the situation that we have right now in American politics, which is that, oh, it's all falling apart and MAGA's gonna die and blah, 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 and all this. I'm like, really? What are you nuts? He's just the first American Republican president to win a shutdown. Really? And now he's in a rollover race. Clearly, he's got a 60-day runway now from now until the State of the Union address to do so. That's what I think he's going to do. So you can salt that analysis to taste, but he's got 60 days, and he comes out this morning with, "Hey, let's release the Epstein files." It's a perfect time to say that, right? Because Epstein has been the thing that has damaged him the most with the base that he's trying to hold, that everybody is trying to meme into existence that he has to hold on to, which is obviously Gen Z men. Gen Z men don't vote, and Gen Z men did not win Trump the election. Gen Z men were a great story surrounding that election, but the reality is that Gen X men won him the election. Myself and people like me and people like you. Now, that being said, when you go back and start thinking about BRICS as the hedge in case the United States loses, what if the United States wins its independence? Well, then you have ARC, right? Which is what we've talked about in the past: America, Russia, China, right? And America, Russia, China makes more sense than BRICS ever did, right? And because America, Russia, China, they all have the same, they all have a, they all have a They all have a common de desire, which is to be the industrial capitals of the world, in the case of the United States and China, and Russia to be the power that sits in the land-based power that sits in between, that provides all the commodities to bring the entire second world out of the 19th century, which has been a British geopolitical imperative for 300 years. Keeping all the stands fighting amongst themselves, keep India and Pakistan, and the whole of Southeast Asia, most of Africa, all of it, right? And it's not just the British in this. Now the Portuguese and the Dutch and the French were all involved in all of this stuff as well, especially the Middle East. So Trump spent most of 2025, trying to fix as many of those permanent conflicts as possible in order to set the stage for when he goes back to now start fixing the domestic situation, which is clearly what's on the table for 2026, which is also the election year, which is also the primaries, which is and all of those things. And so you take it all to its limit, and then you watch to see who gets cold feet. In his case, he watches to see who gets cold feet. He sends certain people out there. I think it's interesting. Because I've been caught up directly in this over the last 3 or 4 days. So since you and I spoke, didn't do this thing, we were supposed to do it on Friday, but over the weekend I got attacked by Robert Barnes, who, ghosted me 3 years ago. Now, I find that interesting that Robert Barnes, for the first time since the last time he and I spoke on my podcast, then goes after me for me going after Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I've always called AOC for MAGA tards. I've been calling her that for 2 years. This is nothing new. I don't know what, now all of a sudden it's not acceptable. I've never liked Marjorie, and I've never trusted her as far as I could throw her. And with those gorilla arms and that grouper face, how the hell could I? She probably benches more than I do.
Truly.
That's only
It's
because I refuse. That's
CrossFit.
only because I refuse to go to the fucking gym. I mean, because I'm, you know, I'd rather smoke. I'd rather smoke cigars, smoke coffee, and and kvetch because I'm good at it. Now, that being said, when I see that happening at the same time as this full court press, while Trump is winning the shutdown and shifting the narrative to, we need the 50-year mortgage, the dissolution of Obamacare. He's out there again today. He just did 9 minutes on the tarmac, outside of Air Force One. I was just watching it before we went live with this. That, he's like, no, we're gonna like I, you know, I just kind of flippantly said, hey, why don't we give the money that everybody's paying to the insurance companies? Why don't we just give it to the people and let them go buy health insurance? Like, no, yeah, that's
Right.
exactly right. So he's clearly been like, oh, we're gonna fix Obamacare. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do this. So you can see the domestic talking points that he's trying to hit now, all the affordability stuff, all of the pricing stuff, and also to stop the radicalization of the young left and right, the young men, right? And say, look, you don't have to go to the accelerationists on the left or the right. You don't have to embrace Fuentes because Trump has betrayed you. And you don't have to embrace Zora Mamdani in New York because, capitalism is fucked. Neither of those things are true, by the way. These guys are both the exact same thing in different packages, marketed to different sectors of the electorate. The reality is that we can bring you back to the center if we can just make life 20% more affordable.
Right.
And we have to do so in such a way that we don't watch a massive deflationary collapse of asset prices, which would then tear the country apart even more so from a, from a just a cultural and societal perspective. All of a sudden, if we're in a deflationary depression, a la 1931 or 32, who does that benefit? Well, the last time it benefited the exact same Anglo-Dutch colonial system that eventually gave us World War II, and all those men that have been radicalized, then they get to fight the big war against Islam, which is clearly what's being set up here. So how about we don't do any of that, and y'all go back to work, building railroads and building chip factories and building steel plants and building ships and building cars and building new houses and you can learn a trade and do a thing, and then we'll fix the cash flow situation for you, such that, and that's what the 50-year mortgage is all about. We'll fix the cash flow situation that you can support a family of four on an electrician's salary. But we can't fix the, but we're in such a state financially because all the wealth has been rolled up into the financial class over the last 25, 30 years, that we now need to reverse the wealth gap and the wealth disparity, and we need to roll the money out of the financial class, out of the Blackstones and the BlackRocks and the State Streets and all those guys, and all the private equity assholes. We need to roll all that out back down to the lower middle class. It's kind of exactly what Javier Milei apparently beginning to do in Argentina. Now, I'm gonna say this, knowing full well that I used to lambaste Milei because I didn't trust him. Why? Because he just looked too good to be true. But it's clear that Trump and Bessent, backing him in Argentina, the same way that now Trump is talking about making a deal with Maduro in Venezuela, the goal is to take those players that are, in the case of Argentina, that have been bound down and kept off the board of, fulfilling their economic promise in the case of Argentina, or in the case of Venezuela being the center for, in the Western Hemisphere, for the international drug and child trafficking trade, in the Western Hemisphere. Hey, how about we take that away? We take that away from them. We take that away from the British and the French and the Dutch out of the out of Venezuela, and we shore up Argentina, and we have allies in those countries as opposed to adversaries. So that's the high level thing. So now let's go all the way back to what you asked, what we talked about originally. And I said, well, BRICS was always a hedge. This is where Donald Trump is winning. And so the antithesis of so if you're his enemy, what narrative are you going to put out there? Well, he doesn't care about Americans. He's trying to fix all. He's trying to, solve Israel's problems and this one's problems and that one's problems. No, by solving those problems, it actually makes it easier for him to solve America's problems. You can't solve the domestic policy if you can't solve the foreign policy and the flow of dollars around the world, so that you don't control how those dollars flow. Because,
Okay, can I interrupt you?
sure.
Can I interrupt you? Because this is, I think, a huge point. This is the question I had actually, just trying to understand this, is going around the world, what's in it for us? And I think Argentina is a great example. What's in it for us? And I asked that to Hanke, Professor Hanke, and he says influence. And I go back to one of the very first times we talked, I don't know, a year and a half ago, whatever that was. We talked about a shift from a politics of in to a politics of influence. I want to say that's what you said, or leverage. Use the word leverage.
Right. Yes. Now,
Okay.
yeah, I'm a leverage kind of guy because I'm thinking like Trump, right? Now, there's two other things that we get out of Argentina directly. Silver and beef. This isn't hard. Argentinian beef is some of the best beef in the world. We have herds that are still recovering from the shock of COVID, because it takes 5 years to replace a friggin' heifer that you've a working heifer that you've slaughtered. And we slaughtered a lot of heifers, and that's the reality. You don't like it. If you don't know, if you think it's 2 years, then you're dumb. You don't know the math, because you've actually never raised livestock. I know how this shit works. I've raised goats, which have a high replacement rate, but and I've talked to cattle farmers directly about this, because I live, up until recently, this is my second place up in Tennessee that you're seeing. And oh, by the way, look, no palatial mansion here, a 14-year-old RV and a freaking pole barn out here bivouacking in rural Tennessee. Oh yeah, I'm really spending all that Israeli money. Okay,
That
so
being said, it is beautiful, man. I'm
hey
very
man,
envious.
I'm loving every minute of it up here. But I worked hard for it, and now I'm putting a little bit of the money that my patrons have blessed me with to go out and have a not have to live in not have to spend 12 months a year in the Florida heat. I get my choice, right? So I can go. I can, actually live a little, and and not have to, not have to eat shit every day. Well, I do. I go on Twitter, so of course I eat shit every day now. But I also give it out as bad as I get it, and it's more than enough fun. But the point being that I think is that with Venice, with Argentina, that we really do need to have another source of beef coming into the country if we're going to actually get people healthy, and we're going to get them off food stamps. Because if he got SNAP, right, which he's going to gut SNAP, which has been the biggest welfare for corporate welfare for places like Walmart and others for decades, right? I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Like Walmart is, might as well just be, might as well just be called Snap Mart. And
Interesting to note, as you're taking a puff, two things. I was buying a steak yesterday and I didn't buy it last night for me and my son because it cost $21
Right.
for a pound of a New York strip.
Now,
Ridiculous.
New York strip at $21 a pound, no way. I'll pay that for ribeye, but I won't pay for that for
Not
like
for
and not,
strip.
not I mean, maybe for prime, if it's actually got some friggin' fat in it. But New York strip doesn't usually have enough fat in it to make it even worth eating. I'm sorry. Makes it make slice it thin, and against the grain, and maybe it's worth eating. But no, I'll pay $21 for ribeye.
But that was at Kroger. But here's the second thing, and this is probably more important. You mentioned silver with Argentina. Silver just got added to the critical minerals list. It's all starting to make sense as you bring this up.
Bingo. Now, so let's go back to what I was talking about with BRICS as the hedge, and then go back to ARC. ARC makes more sense if the United States is trying to make the dollar, again, the collateral of the world, right? And previous it was the U.S. Treasury market, but now we're gonna work into something else. So this is again what Vincent and I talk about at length in the upcoming podcast, which is the following. We have three and now we have two announcements and one bit of speculation. The first announcement was that the Russians aren't going to be issuing Chinese yuan bonds, right? They're going to be issuing government debt payable and payable in Chinese yuan. That's one. the Chinese are issuing US dollar denominated debt. They announced that.
Oh, I
And
did
then
not know. Go ahead.
say
I
I knew
didn't.
the first, I knew the second one. And the other day, Vince pings me, calls me up, and then sends me an audio text and says, "Oh, by the way," and I'm like, I had missed the whole Russia Chinese yuan bond. So I missed the other side of the trade, the other side of the leg. So
Wow.
I missed the one, I saw the other, he saw both of them, and then came back and was, so
Well, I'm
dude,
getting it
this
for you. Go ahead. Go ahead.
now this goes, and then he says, and this goes back to the first time you and I met when we were on with Tom Bodrovich over Palisades Gold Radio. We were doing a Twitter space, and Vince went first and I went second, and I'm like, listen to Vince, I'm going, how am I going to follow this act up, because this guy's good. And I'm having a little bit of imposter syndrome at that point. I'm not kidding. This is what's going through my head. And I start bringing up, well, this guy VBL, I don't even know his real name at that point. And I'm like, well, then we have to, let's start talking about the concept of putting of gold, Judy Shelton's gold-backed treasury bonds into the conversation about where we're headed in order to recapitalize the United States and everything else. I had been talking about that a lot, so I just, used that as my talking point. The minute I said that, Vince was like, "Holy shit, you throw gold down on the yield curve. Yeah, that fixes a whole lot of things." And then a friendship was born, right? And no lie, a friendship was born in that 15 minutes that we chatted together in that space, right? And then had Vince on the podcast right after that. We've gotten along like a house on fire since then. And again, like I said, a friendship was born. Not to suck each other's dicks or anything, but hey. So, but sorry.
Moving on,
Now,
moving on. No, go
moving
yet. Go ahead.
on. So, dude, if it's not at least entertaining, it's not
No,
worth
it's
doing.
funny. It's funny. Go ahead.
Exactly. So this is what Vince texted me about the other day. It's like, do the thing. He's like, am I crazy? The Russians buy Chinese yuan and issue debt in Chinese yuan. The Chinese issue. Buy dollars to issue debt and to issue Chinese debt in dollars, and the United States issues a new treasury bond backed in gold.
Right. I'm following.
And now all of a sudden we have a complete, now we have
It
the entire,
works.
now we have a collateralized system where all three of their bonds are all effectively backed by gold. And they don't have to compete against each other. They can all use each other
That's
for
the thing.
liquidity. They all use each other for liquidity in this respect. And it all works. So, and then of course, if the Russians need to, they can issue gold-backed bonds if they need to, in order to balance. And everybody can like work against, can work against and with each other at the same time to keep everybody else honest. And guess who's cut out of that entire picture? Could it be London? Could it be Brussels? Could it be Paris? Could it be Zurich? So now, let's think about this. What happened this morning that through I saw this, somebody posted this up on my Slack server this morning, and it sent me all the way back to 2023. You're gonna love this, Andy. You are. This is why my people are the greatest people in the world. They find a headline. UBS considering moving their domicile from Switzerland to the United States.
Whoa, dude.
Now wait, let's go back and set the Wayback Machine to March of 2023. And I'm going to pimp my own ride here.
That's huge. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I wrote an article back in, when I used to actually write for a living, about you, me, and the FDI. I don't remember the name of the article. It was like, it was like FDI, like perpetual bonds, the FDIC, and why the Fed just executed Europe. Something was the name of it. One of my ridiculous titles, but. That article was written right after Jerome Powell negotiated the bailout of Credit Suisse and the merger of Credit Suisse and UBS. When I saw that this morning, I just looked at my, and so my patron's like, "Well, I don't know what this means, and is it this? Is it that?" I'm like, "This is very simple. This is downstream of what happened then." Powell back then, if you remember, Powell. This is right after Silvergate. This is right after they executed the three. S banks, Silvergate, Silicon Valley, and the other one, whatever, doesn't matter. They were
Yeah,
all
I remember what
executed.
you're talking about. Yep, go ahead.
They were all executed by the Federal Reserve, as far as I'm concerned. Caitlin Long's on the other side of this. She thinks this is terrible. It was a terrible thing the Fed did. I know why they did it. She and I disagree about this. That's fine. It's a healthy disagreement. We're probably both right to a greater or lesser extent. It's not important. The disagreement is a healthy one between professionals, right?
Right.
Or, so Because I've had Caitlin on the podcast, we've talked this thing out, yada, yada, yada. She's given me the other side of the story. My giving her my side of the story. Let the audience figure out who they think is right. What I'm going to tell you is that that execution then set in motion, at some point, started to set in motion a response from City of London and Europe in order to try and cause a banking crisis in the United States. What happened? A further banking crisis in the United States. What did Powell do? In order to he then had to force Yellen to go for unlimited FDIC for insured accounts, right? And he set up the Bank Term Funding Program to allow the regional banks to go in and get money at par, right? He also forced the ECB to do the same damn thing. They actually did the
I
bank
didn't
walk
know
of
that.
shame. They actually did the bank walk of shame to go and hit the discount window, the central bank version of the discount window, while our regional banks were given a different program to, to tide them over. Zero hedge called the BTFP QE, blah, 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 blah. It's all bullshit because none of that, it's none of it was QE. It was liquidity, but it's exactly what the Fed's supposed to do, which is to backstop the U.S. banking system and the U.S. commercial paper market. That's what it's supposed to do. If you don't like it, then that's fine. We can talk about that after we wind the Fed down. But as of right now, we're not winding the Fed down because it's the best asset we have in order to beat the other central banks who would then leave us if we got rid of the Fed, leave us defenseless. And this is why I hate Thomas Massie, because he's not smart enough to realize he thinks he's smart, the smartest guy in the room, when he really is the dumbest guy in the room, because you don't get rid of the Fed until the Fed is no longer needed. When you're in a war with central banks, you have to have a central bank. I'm sorry, it's just the way things work. You can eventually win that fight and deprecate the value of the central bank, but you also then have to change the entire global monetary system away from the central banks being central to it to something different, to national treasuries being central to you to national monetary policy. And then you can use the and then you can use the central bank as a means to backstop the domestic commercial paper market and enforce the in the par value of your currency in the international markets. That's what you should that's what the Fed's role should be. That has to be deprecated over time. That's what I've been arguing for 2.5 to 3 years now. So now let's finish the story about Credit Suisse and
And that's
UBS.
what happens now. That's what's happening now
That's what's starting to happen. That's what
with
Trump's tariffs
Argentina. With Trump
Trump
tariffs,
Trump's tariffs.
Argentina dollar is re-dollarization.
Hey,
With
the Fed just came out this morning and said with a study about the last 150 years came out of the San
I read
Francisco
it.
Fed of all things, saying that tariffs are not inflationary.
Inflationary. I read it. It's on zero hedge. I think
Now,
zero hedge project.
yeah,
Go
it was
ahead.
on
Go ahead.
zero hedge this morning. So, well, let's go back to what happened with what Powell did that weekend. It's very similar to what, they did to Lehman Brothers, and meaning markets closed on Friday, and then by Sunday afternoon, we had a resolution. But this was a resolution that was good for us, as opposed to what Hank Paulson did with Lehman Brothers. What Hank Paulson did with Lehman Brothers detonated and created the global the 2008 financial crisis. I've now come to believe that he did it on purpose, but that's a different story for a different podcast. But what Powell did was he forced the merger of UBS and Credit Suisse, and in the process, because they could get away with it in within Swiss banking or within the contracts, there were these things called CoCo bonds, the AT1 conditional convertible bonds or CoCo bonds, all over Europe. There's like at the time there was 275 billion of these things. Now, what I posited back then was that by writing these CoCo bonds, these AT1 bonds were supposed to be the first in line to be made whole if the bank failed, and convertible to equity in that process. Now, you start a run on UBS and Credit Suisse as a bit of revenge for detonating three of your onshore Eurodollar banks in regulated by the San Francisco Fed, these tech bro banks,
I'm getting
Silvergate,
it.
Silicon. Okay. The Fed detonates them. The Bank of England, ECB, whomever, attack Credit Suisse. They drive to try to drive the stock price to zero and then force conversion of these bonds such that no one's willing to buy Credit Suisse at that point. because anybody who buys Credit Suisse is going to have to dilute out Credit Suisse and at that point become the majority shareholder of whoever, not only of Credit Suisse, but of whoever buys Credit Suisse.
Yes.
Right? So I had to reread my entire
Genius.
article
Go
this
ahead.
wait, I had to reread my entire article this morning, and I barely remembered what I wrote, right? So that was the plan. These cocoa bonds were effectively perpetual debt. They were never going to end. So the goal here was, so what Powell did was, and by selling it to UBS, they were able to use the covenant within these bonds, in these particular bonds with Swiss franc, these Swiss banks, that those covenants could be terminated and they could push them to the back of the line and
Okay.
make the depositors whole. But in order to make the depositors whole, and that's what they did. And so eventually, effectively, these AT1 cocoa bonds were laying there in wait as financial time bombs to roll up the entire banking system of Europe, commercial banking system of Europe, into the people who are going to foment a banking crisis in Europe. So you create the banking crisis, you drive the stock prices all the way down to zero, and then you convert these bonds into equity, take these, buy all these banks, and then force the central banks to recapitalize everybody, thereby putting massive pressure on the domestic central banks, and then eventually you just roll everybody up into the ECB.
Right.
That was Soros's plan. And Powell executed it.
God.
Now, when you
I'm thinking
stop
about
the,
this. It's
now, when you
crazy.
stop that, now, when you, now, when you, now, when you take all those dots and you go, oh, UBS wants to relocate to the United States and get
Right.
out from underneath the European Union. Why? Well, because they know we're about to execute whatever's left of the European bond market because we've destroyed the concept of convertibility of these AT1 cocoa bonds.
Right.
Now, if they wanted to, so you want to roll up all these German banks, who cares? Do
Right.
you want to roll up all these Austrian, who cares? I don't give a, you do it, but it's all on you. You don't care. We've gotten our capital out.
Right.
And you're not going to take, we gave you the blueprint to destroy these, the market, and those bonds all went bidless. They all dropped in like value, like 20, 25% when that was executed. So they destroyed the value, if I remember correctly. We're going back 2.5 years now. But if I remember correctly, what happened to those bonds all dropped like 25% in value during this thing. And the kicker to why this isn't fan fiction on my part is because Zero Hedge reported the next morning on all of this. And this is the kicker. This is the key to understanding that I'm not wrong in this analysis, is that who was not consulted at all about this plan that Powell put together with Credit Suisse and UBS? Two people or two entities, the US Treasury Department under Janet Yellen and the ECB. They were not consulted at all. He just did it, fucked them, and walked away.
That has severe implications.
That is why when that happened, I
He
understood at
became a
that moment.
fan.
I went from going, maybe Powell is really on our side. I'm seeing this stuff. When I saw that, I'm like, nope, Powell's a fucking man. And he's executing perfectly on our behalf by detonating this particular thing that was clearly their path to quote unquote fiscal integration. They were planning on doing it, and then it just destroyed the market for European sovereign European debt issued by the European Commission. Those
Yep.
bonds, like those sure bonds, are completely illiquid. They're 60% underwater. Like all of this, every one of these plans has been sitting out there in the zeitgeist in order to get in order to set the table for when they were going to do the great taking in Europe.
Wow. This is huge. I'm just
I know.
processing.
Yeah, no, I know. And so this is part of the
I'm like getting
reason.
chills. Go
Yeah.
ahead. Go ahead.
So this is part of the reason why You haven't been able to move me off my, and you being the royal you, the world, you have not been able to move me off my position on this because these are the facts. These are the things that happened and why. And everybody's predictions about what would happen in this case were wrong. And it was just yet more,
Yes.
agitprop slop coming from either Reuters or the Financial Times or this one or that one. And I have a rule. Who's ever silent is winning, and who's ever bitching is getting killed.
That's a great rule, by the way, right?
Now, who was not bitching during all of this? Jamie Dimon,
I was going to say,
even Brian Moynihan, none, Goldman, none of them said a word.
Bessette
Meanwhile,
wasn't really, yeah.
everybody in Europe was screaming that this was unfair. Yeah, obviously. So, there are certain things that you certain things you operating principles that you have, and you just apply them, and you go, oh, well, that's obvious. This is why today I'm watching all the people bitching about going after Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm like, oh, what this that all the people who are bitching are losing
Yeah.
on the U.S. domestic policy, and the level of psyop and the level of histrionics that I'm seeing about every issue surrounding Trump right now tells me whose ox is being gored. And here's the kicker. Here's the next part of this. Why is everybody so against the idea of bringing Fannie and Freddie out of conservatorship? Why? What's so bad about bringing Fannie and Freddie out of conservatorship? Wall Street wants it. They want to run the book on this. But why is FinTwit out? Why is every shitbag who was just dude, I can't tell you like how many times I've watched over the last 6 months some new guy show up on Twitter we've never heard of before, but he's all of a sudden he's in everybody's feed, singing some song about how there's going to be a credit crisis in the United States
Follow
or
the money.
this.
Who's not on the take?
It's easy.
Yeah.
These people are all being bought by Twitter ad money, and it's not them. They're not real. Half of these guys I don't even think exist. And if they do exist, well, that'd be nice. I'd like to see them in public. Like at this point, I'm like, I don't, you know, like I don't. I'm watching this going. Even if they are real, clearly they went from nobody to all of a sudden they're in everybody's feed. And you know who I'm talking about, folks. If you spend any time on FinTwit, all of a sudden these people are everywhere. That's ad money.
Yeah.
Who's got the money to buy that kind of advertising for these accounts? You think it's these guys? They got, like, have you looked at Twitter's advertising rates? They're hideously expensive.
Yeah.
And cool, that's fine. It just tells you that that's intelligence agency or a central bank or some big family office or this, that, something. So when you're watching that, you're just like, oh, and no matter what happens, and then you want, and then if you push back on them, they always argue from a particular perspective, and they're always very dismissive and always very, and then they usually insult you directly. It's like it's very obvious. It's like this is they're way out of their depth. I'm not saying that I don't insult people on Twitter all the time. Of course I do,
Right.
but I do. But I do six podcasts a week and all the rest of it. Like y'all know that I'm real. You may think I take my $7,000 payment from the friggin' from the hook noses, but that's between you and whatever god you think you worship. It ain't true, but it is what it is, right?
Okay, so work that out for me then. Fannie and Freddie will become private.
Well,
More than
why are they against the entire concept of Fannie and Freddie being brought out of conservatorship? Why are they ups why don't we want to recapitalize the middle
I
class of the
don't
United
know.
States?
I want it.
Yeah, of
Yeah.
course you want it. I want it. You want it. Every normal person in America wants it. So who doesn't want it?
Right.
When you can answer yourself that question for real, that's you'll always come up with the same answer. London. Because the recapitalization of the American kulaks is how you stop them turning the United States into a civil war country. Like, who wins if the United States falls into civil war?
Europe.
Who's
London.
bought? I've been saying for years, I used to say this when I was on with my friends over at the Durand. I would say, guys, stop looking at the conflict in front of you and look at the meta conflict. If the United States and Russia get into a war together, who wins? So who's
Not the
pushing that
US.
narrative? Not the US, not Russia. If I'm in third place in a game, what do I
You're
want
in.
to do? I want to take first place and second place and get them to fight each other. This isn't hard. Like if you don't know, if you can't figure that out, let's get on a plane. I'll sit you down. I'll teach you how to play fucking Dune, and I'll watch, and you'll watch me run the table with you as I pull everybody into a back room, make deals with everybody, and then betray everybody. And you go, oh yeah, I win. How did you do that? Because I'm an asshole. That's how I'm. That's because that's you know, and it's not that I'm any great strategic thinker. Because I wasn't a strategic thinker. I had it done to me 1,000 times. But you practice this and you practice that skill set in a real environment where it's no stakes. It's just your ego at a gaming table. At your kitchen table. It's one thing. But now apply it to the world where there are all the stakes. And what do you think people are willing to do under that circumstance? You think they're willing to shoot a president? You think they're willing to, sacrifice whatever asset they have on the board? Like,
Of
you
course.
know, so I, for example, I've been saying for a long time now, I'm no fan of the Israelis, but I can see when they're being scapegoated for somebody else. And so I don't think of them as just a villain. I also think of them as a victim. And potentially, if they play their cards right, depending on how they play their cards, they could become a hero. And I'd like to believe that there's a faction within London that can play that game as well. But until they stop acting like the snidely whiplash villain, soft powering everybody into shaking up the ant jar every fucking day, every other Thursday, sorry, I'm like, and I analyze them as the villain. But I can see that the English people, for example, are the victim. So who gets to be the hero? Well, the hero is not allowed to come out of British politics. Here, give you a perfect example of what I'm now. And now, look at the polls in Britain, for example. If you just okay, let's take that hero, victim, villain triangle thing, and let's start applying it to, the center of the problem or my center of the problem. Even if you don't think that I'm correct about that, but let's just run my analysis, okay, and start thinking the hero, victim, villain triad. Well, we know who the victim. We know who the villain is. Bank of England. City of London, blah, 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 blah. We know who the victim is in this case, the Irish people, all the people of the Commonwealth, average Canadians, average Irishmen, average Englanders, Australians, everybody in the Commonwealth. And then anybody who's potentially under BIS, Universal Commercial Code, because the BIS is just a rebranding of either the British Crown Corporation or the East Dutch, the British East India Company, one or the other. The IMF and the BIS are just rebranded of those two organizations. I don't remember which one's which, but they're there. So that would be us, and that would be most of the rest of the world as well. Now, but let's just start with the Commonwealth people. If they're the victims, then who's the hero? Well, if you don't allow a hero to emerge, then you're stuck in this victim villain process where everybody can, all the victims can be set against each other so that the villains can walk away scot-free. So you keep a hero from emerging over and over and over again. Donald Trump in the United States, Viktor Orban in Hungary, anyone in friggin'
Malay.
Britain, Milei, anyone in Britain. And Liz Truss was clearly the person who thought she could break the mold, and she probably had the backing of Queen Elizabeth. Because her mini budget and her entire plan to get the Britain to get the UK and to pay the dividend, the Brexit dividend that never materialized because of currency manipulation between the euro and the euro pound cross and the UK gilt and German Bund markets, she was clearly running with a basic premise that is no different really than Donald Trump's if you go back and you look at it, and she was out of power like 9 days later. And Queen Elizabeth was dead, and I believe she's dead. I'm using the scare quotes of how she died. It's easy to make, oh, well, she was 99, and okay, fine. But it had to be that week. It had to be the week that they executed a coup against a political coup against the only prime minister that was actually working for the British people since like fucking Margaret Thatcher? Really? Okay, fine. But you want to believe that that those two things aren't that there's no correlation, there's no causality with that correlation? Be my guest. You know, continue to eat crayons. I don't give a shit. That's obvious. Now,
Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
so
That's
dude, the comedy's not good, but it's free, right? Now,
funny. Go ahead.
so there's no, but if you look at the polls in Britain, clearly reform would take over tomorrow. So what happened last week? Keir Starmer, I saw a report from Keir Starmer last week saying, look, his cabinet's starting to revolt against him over the budget situation, over everything, over all the corruption and and you're starting to see British politicians start to back off from the whole turning the country over to Muslims, right? Starting to happen. We're starting to see some of this stuff, right? Why? They're trying to stay in power. Starmer turns to his cabinet, says, you do realize that if you oust me, that's going to trigger a general election, right? Why? Because he would. It was a threat. Get rid of me and allow reform to take over. And we're all going to hang. So that's how desperate things are for the British establishment, the British establishment, my friend Ian Burlingame likes to put it, as opposed to the English people and the English tradition. That's how desperate things are. And what's Trump doing right now? He's pushing on every freaking button imaginable relative to the Brits. He's letting Tucker Carlson go out there. It was interesting. All the people that I've talked about, as far as like the influencers who crashed out, clearly Candace Owens has crashed completely out. So was Steve Bannon. I'm not sure what Alex Jones's gig is, but at this point, I can't make heads or tails of Alex, but I haven't been able to make heads or tails of Alex for about 10 years now. I just find him entertaining. But the swing vote on all this was Tucker Carlson. And I'm like, I don't know what to think of Tucker. And but over the weekend, while all this was happening and Barnes was going after me and he and I were sniping at each other on Twitter and all this stuff was happening, and I was taking unbelievable levels of, nonsensical crap on Twitter all weekend. I'm at the point now where I block between 6 and 10 people a day on Twitter. Okay. I told Dave Collum, just liberally use the block button, dude. It's okay. You need to, because most of these people aren't real anyway. Now, and so I'm at that point. And by the way, for anybody in the audience, if you're listening to this, if you accuse me of taking $7,000 from the Israelis, it's an auto block. It's an auto block. I will not allow you to engagement farm off of my feed, even if you're real. So don't do it. If you want to engagement farm, you've got it off of me. If you want to undermine me, that's fine. Do so in a way that's less obvious. You got to up your game, dude, or you're just not going to be in the game anymore. Sorry, that's the way it works. Now, that didn't work. So,
Get it again. Go ahead. Get it again.
no, so we, so where were we? Oh my God. So
Tucker
looking
Carlson.
at, right. So Tucker, so I was worried about Tucker. And then what I said while this was happening this weekend, I said, okay, so Marjorie Taylor Greene outed, Robert Barnes outed, this one outed, that one outed, this one outed. What about Tucker? Well, if Trump comes out and defends Tucker Carlson, or he doesn't go after him, that's your sign.
And that's
And
what
what did
happened.
he? And he went out this weekend and he defended Tucker Carlson.
Yep.
So he sent Carlson out there to ratchet things up to 11 and to see who popped to the surface. I mean, I'm sorry, but Ian Burlingame is right. He's just doing loyalty tests left and right. Don Trump Leone is just doing, he's in complete control of the situation. This is a loyalty test at this point.
Okay, so he, and this is anecdotal, but I remember him talking about that when they're asking what's the most important things with your allies, what's the most important thing when whatever. Trump said loyalty.
Loyalty. That's all he,
Loyalty.
it's all he's got. That's all he can work with at this point. He has a plan. He has the prescription. He knows who the target is. It's very clear. He's made the target abundantly clear who the target is. And now it's just a matter of execution. And if you're not on board, he's going to loyalty test you until you're done. And I'm not, and I'm saying to myself, for example, under this scenario, okay, if he wins, mazel tov. Everything's gonna be, and I love to use that phrase just to like really needle people. Mazel tov. It's all great. I'm gonna like do the hook nose thing. And if he loses, we're all gonna swing from lampposts.
Yeah.
But I said before, and I'll say it again,
Yeah, stand for something.
there are no atheists in foxholes, and there are no libertarians either. Because libertarians don't know how to fight. They don't know how to fight because all they know how to do is snipe. All they know how to do is critique. It's an oppositional defiance disorder, masquerading as a political movement. Now, there's a lot of things about libertarianism as a thing that I still subscribe to.
Me
I still
too.
want, right. But at the same time, I'm like, when, like, this is why Rand Paul, Thomas Massie, and Marjorie Taylor Greene are not are not fighters, right? This is why they're a problem. Because, look, when you're in the opposition, that's the time to stand on your principles, try and bring people to your side, build a coalition, build a community, build people who are behind you, and gain their trust and talk about the right things. And then when you get into the majority, politics is the science of what's capable, what's possible. Well, now you take that and you go, we can get this. So let's go get it. And if we get this, then we might be able to get that. Then we have the opportunity for stretch goals, right? If you're talking Kickstarter, hey, let's get funding. Let's get this thing done. Let's get the project off the ground. And if we get more, great, then we can do all these other things as well. These guys have done at every turn for years is to take the opposite side of whatever's dominant in order to fundraise off of it. And then at best, I'm being the most generous of them at best. And at worst, they're working for the other side. I mean, you've only got one of two options here. I mean, maybe there's something in between. And maybe their families are under, I mean, I've been trying to be generous to them for years. And I'm like, I can't be generous to them right now. If you showed Trump any loyalty whatsoever, you'd be on the same fucking military base that Tulsi Gabbard's sitting at, that Tulsi Gabbard and Pete Hegseth and all the rest of them are. You don't see these people in freaking public. It's because they're on a military base somewhere under guard by people that Trump trusts, because these people have to be able to do their jobs and not be killed. Well, guess what? If you
Literally,
were loyal, if you were loyal, and you're not loyal, so therefore, okay, well, that's all I needed to know. And that's all anybody else needs to know. And if you're wedded to your principles, so such that you're not willing to play any kind of strategic game, then you're the easiest person in the world to counter. You're the easiest person in the world to manipulate, even if they're just stupid. I mean, honestly, Rand Paul, Thomas Massie, and Marjorie Taylor Greene are too stupid to be that stupid. I mean, are acting too stupid to be that stupid. It's not possible, to quote my friend Alex Craner. Like, when you see something that dumb, it can't be dumb on purpose. It can't be dumb. It can't just be accidentally dumb. It has to be dumb on purpose.
I use that with Trump actually as like this is what we're seeing, but this is not what's going on. I want to
And
talk.
then they get caught up in like him saying stupid shit. And Donald Trump just says a bunch of shit, but look at what he's done. Like they're crashing out over he hasn't changed anything about H-1B and all, and yet they've revoked like 800,000 friggin' student visas this year. And H-1B visas this year. Like immigration is net negative this year. Like, what do you want? Like Kristi Noem comes out yesterday and says they deported over 2 million friggin' people.
That's
Like,
results.
and she can't lie about that, because if she lies about that, like the courts would convict her tomorrow. Because the Congress is against them, the courts are against them, all of this stuff. So they can only go with the stuff that they know that they can defend. They're in the position of always having to tell the truth, or at least the best version of the truth that they can get away with, from a legal perspective. And everything else, you may want them to reassure you. That's between you and your therapist. That's not Donald Trump's job. Sorry. And if you're not willing, this is why I've said for a long time, I said, let's cut $3 trillion from the federal budget and then allocate like $500 billion to put everybody through therapy to cure them of their TDS. That'd be the most MAHA fucking thing we could do.
Two things, and I think I know the answer to this. We talked about it last time. I want you to still to address it briefly, and then I want to talk to, and we'll end on this. I want to talk about 26.
Sure.
expectations, knowing that the game is fluid, knowing that the chess pieces are constant. And I say this to the benefit to all my viewers and listeners, and to all my viewers and listeners, and I said to this offline, Tom, I interview you and I get 40,000 views, or this interview will get 40,000 views. Know that the game is fluid. Know that it changes, and know that there's a lot of strategy in this. So, two questions. Work out Venezuela for me, because that's a hub for, I think I know what you're going to say. We talked about this last time. Not only a drug hub, but also for trafficking, and all that. But what's the plan here? Because
It's
I don't
interesting
believe
you
it's
say that.
oil, and I don't think it's war, but what's the plan?
Well, it might actually be oil. I may have been wrong about that.
Okay.
And
And
here's
then
the and
just
here
hold
and
on.
well,
Pin it,
okay.
pin that, pin that. And then I want to work out 26. Go ahead.
Well, they're both the same thing. 26 is easy. Trump just has to shift his messaging right now to admitting that things are not great in order to reconnect with the average person. And then calmly outline the plan. And I mean calmly outline the plan. Not be Donald Trump for a day. You've got to transcend the character you play on TV. People want to believe that Trump has it under control, that he's not lost the plot, that that's easy. That's how you shore up the squishies in Congress. That's how you shore up the squishies in the Senate. That's why Paul Green and Massey are examples and had to be made examples of. This is where your bread is buttered with me, or it's not. I'm going to take you to the Legion of the Promised Land. They didn't have the freaking, they didn't pack the gear to serve in my beloved corps. Right? To quote Gunnery Sergeant Hartman from Full Metal Jacket.
I got it. Yeah,
Right?
right.
My job is to weed out all non-hackers who do not pack the gear to serve in my beloved corps. How tall are you, Private? 5 foot 9. I didn't know they stacked shit that high. Yeah. Okay. So
Yeah, great movie. Great movie.
I don't have all goddamn thing memorized, right?
Right.
I've only seen the movie 40 times.
Right.
So that's 26. Venezuela could be a mixture of things. I got a great note from a patron over the weekend, or last week, that I finally read over the weekend. And I covered it in yesterday's market report from my patrons about another way to look at Venezuela on top of what we know. Like, first everybody says, oh, it's about the oil, but we don't give a shit about the oil. The oil sucks. Like, we don't use that oil anymore. Then it's about French Guiana's oil. Maybe. Okay, keep your scalloping. Keep your scalloping. It's not about that. Well, it's not about the drugs. Well, why couldn't it be about the drugs? Why can't it be about the drugs and the trafficking and everything else? And then he and what he said was, maybe, Trump is an idiot. Or maybe, and this is that the moment when, like, the boy becomes a man. And in the big note that I got from in setting all this up, or maybe Trump's playing a deeper game than this. Maybe he's setting Venezuela up as a Western Hemisphere version of Saudi Arabia. I am not subscribing to this idea. I'm going to
Makes
fill in the,
sense. It
I'm
makes
going to, I'm,
sense.
I'm gonna I'm going to fill in some details. When I read the whole thing, I went, wow. I sent him a short note back going, that's good. That's good analysis. That's good thinking. That's what I want to see from the community. Thank you so much. Outstanding. What I didn't say is better than the other half than half of your regular comments that you usually send me. This particular guy is like half, it's like sometimes he's great and sometimes he's not. Like he's all over the freaking place.
That's a
This
characters
one,
of brilliance.
that's a
Characters of
well, it's a
brilliance.
char it's a character. It means that he's engaged and he's really thinking,
Yeah.
right? And that's fine. And so we can disagree and have healthy disagreements as long as it doesn't, devolve into shouting, and as long as it also doesn't devolve into insults. That's the big thing. Leave the insulting for to me on Twitter, okay? Since like Donald Trump, like, and he should actually leave the insults from here going forward to his staff.
Right.
I think he should just back off and
Stop.
lead.
Yeah.
Just back off and lead at this point.
Right.
But what I mean by the Saudi Arabia thing is that, there's a lot
Tom, it
in
makes
South America.
sense. Go
You've
ahead.
got French Guiana's oil. You've got all this. He's come out and said regime change of Maduro is not on the table. The key to understanding why this guy's argument is that Machado, who was just given the Nobel Peace Prize by Davos,
Think about that.
is being set up
Think about that. Yep.
by our CIA to go in and steal Venezuela out for, so basically meet the new boss, same as the old boss. To take Maduro, who has been doing their dirty work, take him out, replace him with someone even worse, so that Trump can't take Venezuela out from underneath them. Maduro clearly wants to make a deal. He's made, you know, he's
Leverage.
so no, Nick, the bus driver, gets to stay in power, but you work for me now. Same thing with what's going on with the Qataris. He's still got to work on, that's why he brought the Qataris in. That's why he brought Al-Shabani in from Syria. It's the same thing. That guy, Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood, British MI6, leave him from Erdogan. Take Syria over. Schmooze him, tell him, you go after ISIS, you're going to survive. You don't go after ISIS, I'm leaving my guys at Al-Tanf and I'll take you out. You can work with me or you can work against me, but if you work against me, it's not going to end well for you. Okay? That those people are evil. Like they're horrible. So, like that guy Al-Sharaa, whatever his fucking name is, yeah, should he swing from lampposts and be fed to Hillary Clinton's dogs? Because I wouldn't feed them my dogs, but I like my dogs too goddamn much. Yes. But this is geopolitics.
These are the
This is
cards you
not
play.
about, this is about not always writing. This is the heart. This is the argument. This is why the whole Epstein thing was so stupid. You don't care about the victims. And like, no, I can't. The victims are 20 years gone. The operation is 20 years gone. There's no justice for these people at this point. Epstein's dead. Okay? That's doing any of this stuff is not going to bring justice. It may bring closure, but it's not going to bring justice. Okay? It's not that I don't have sympathy for the victims or anything else. It's about, hey, how can we make sure that another Epstein never happens? Can we fix that? And then we can grieve for the Epstein victims. We can use their victim status. We can use their suffering as a rallying cry to make sure that this shit never happens again. That is the best thing we can do for as a legacy, as action. And anybody wallowing in the act itself, fuck you, you're an operative living in the past trying to prey on people's emotions. And you're not thinking like someone trying to actually fix anything. And any argument that you make otherwise is, I'm so sorry, strategically invalid. And it's subordinate to that. I'm sorry, that what I just laid out, isn't that a better outcome than wallowing in the old misery? And say, well, just let it all out into the light of day and that'll fix it. It won't fix anything. We've let a lot of things out into the light of day. Did it stop any of this shit? These same freaking people have been, you know, running guns, people, kids, and drugs for 400 years. And it's come out at times, and and they destroyed whole societies over and over and over again. Or are we gonna actually stop this? Are we going to end the problem? Are you committed to that? Is that what you want to do? Or do you just want to, prosecute past sins? Because now you just sound like the ignorant race baiters that want reparations for slavery. You sound no different. And you know that and these are the same people that would go, yeah, but most of the people who are descendants of slaves today don't deserve reparations. Like that's been the libertarian, and the libertarians are the worst at this. And they refused to admit, because they can't stop being the smartest people in the room, that they were played. They can't admit to themselves that they were played. And they were played like a fiddle, because they were easy to play like a fiddle, because they are ab reactors, not and they're no and they're NPCs. They're no different than, the crazy awfuls, with TDS, breaking down in their freaking therapist office. twice a month. Like, fuck off. Like, that's who you are. Like, you don't like it. That hurt. I don't care if that hurts your peepees. You're not the smartest guys in the room, clearly. If you were, you'd be able to build a political movement that gets more than half a goddamn percent. But you're not. So how about we start acting like grown-ups? How about we start acting like men willing to lead and fix the problem? So Venezuela, if we have to make a deal with Maduro, who's a bad guy, but we can fix Venezuela,
Make the
and
deal.
we then you make the deal. If you can flip the Qataris, who are evil freaking people, if you can flip them, yeah, you never turn your back on these people. Yeah, you never turn around and say, yeah, you're our permanent ally. No, yeah, no, you backstab me one more time, you sons of bitches. No, I heard something this morning about the again, unsourced, unconfirmed rumor, for example, that a patron of mine who works in the financial sector in New York says, sends me a DM this afternoon, says, I've got it on good authority that Curtis Sliwa, who ran as the Republican in the New York, the former Guardian Angels guy, was offered and accepted $7 million from the Qataris to run, to not drop out of the race. He swung the election.
Interesting.
And if he took the, and if that's the truth, then he took the money. I'm not saying he did or he didn't. I'm telling you, this is what I heard. But this is the kind of thing we have to watch out for everywhere.
Interesting.
You have to realize that if they did that, that's the last time they're going to betray anybody. Then again, maybe who the hell knows? Like what that situation is. But Trump is going to use Mamdani or Mamdani to, to
Populate
destroy.
Florida.
Well, that's not just that, to destroy the Democratic Party in New York is what he's going to do. And if you don't think that these people are so vindictive that they wouldn't put, look, George, we know that Alexander Soros and company put tens of millions of dollars into Mamdani. We know this. If you don't think for a minute that Soros and company didn't run Mamdani in New York in order to take and destroy Trump's beloved New York City. Because remember, where's Trump from?
Queens.
Queens, right? What is one of Trump's biggest faults as a human being? That he's from Queens and
The
not from
Queens.
Manhattan. He's not from Manhattan. He was never accepted by those people in Manhattan. He was never accepted in those circles. He spent most of his life trying to be accepted by those people, and then he found out that, oh my God, they're 10 times worse than I ever thought. And that's why now he comes out this morning and says, oh yeah, let's release the Epstein files, because we know goddamn well that he's the guy who turned that started the process of turning Epstein in. And he's just like sucked them in and sucked them in and sucked them in, and now he's going to reverse them. And now we got the next 60 days to now set the narrative going forward. You watch. Like every day is opposite day in Trump's new America. Never forget that. And
So
there
I
that makes his opponents really easy, because then now he's just moving them into, and I just don't think it's just Trump. I've said this before. I think Stephen Miller is actually the strategic genius in the organization. And I'm sure there's a couple other people who are working with him, but Miller is like, he's the real deal.
Yeah. Miller and
And
Bessette. I would say Bessette as well.
oh yeah, Miller on political issues, Bessent
Bessette on monetary.
on finance and money and everything else. Absolutely.
Okay. So again, just for clarity, what's Venezuela? Do you think that's Saudi Arabia?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I
It
think it's an
makes
interest.
sense.
It makes sense, because now you start the process of really dump not look. One of the things I was thinking about the other day, I was on when I did the podcast the other day with Richard Poe, and I let Richard tell us a big history of the Bolsheviks and the Russian Revolution and all this stuff. And again, salt Richard's analysis to taste. I'm not undermining the man, but there's he has a perspective. There are multiple perspectives on that period of history, and everybody should read multiple perspectives on that period of history to get a good understanding of what actually happened. But Richard's narrative, relative to Churchill and Lord Palmerston and all that stuff, tracks with what we know. Now, in that conversation, I'm like in that whole podcast for like 5 minutes, and at the end, I said, Richard, all I'm hearing when I listen to you talk is This is why the Soviets acted the way they did during the Cold War. This is why they created the PLO as an antipode against Israeli expansion, which is really against British expansion. This is why they did this. This is why they moved into Venezuela. This is why they moved into Cuba. This is why they did these things. They were making anti-British moves that looked like anti-American moves because at that
Yeah.
point, the Americans and the British were like this. Now the
Right.
Americans and the British are not like that. So now you can watch Putin back off in these areas where the United States and Russia used to be adversaries, fighting the old Cold War. These old Cold War groups that were set up as adjutants, the whole Middle East, Muslim Brotherhood, this, that, all of these things, the PLO, all these things. What is Trump doing? He's systematically knocking them down.
He really is. Go ahead.
Right? So now you, and then, so what are you going to see? You're going to see the Russians come in and make like they'll support Maduro in order to, play the game. And then eventually, when Trump escalates, Putin moves some, assets in there in order to like continue to make the fight. But the reality is that you're sucking, the British and Davos into outing themselves as to who they, what their real goal is, which is to stop Trump from flipping Venezuela. And then all that has to happen is for Trump to go, well, I want to kind of deal with Maduro. And Russia goes, great, I don't need to be in fucking Venezuela anymore. Bye. And then the United States puts an air base in outside of Caracas and controls the air and the sea flow out of the country, stabilizes the Maduro regime, and the libertarians all scream about, nation building.
The funny thing is, I'm laughing because I can see all of that happening, right?
And the best part of why I can so easily see that happen is because I used to be one of those retards.
Yeah, I used to be one of those too. Why are we nation building? Why are we nation
That's
building?
why are we doing any of this? And it's so easy to just ab react and become a knee jerk about any of these things when the truth of the matter is that, like everything else, life is complicated.
Yeah, and it makes
And
sense too.
like the game again, what is your goal? If you're engaging in goal-oriented behavior, then you have to make deals with bad people. Nothing you can do about that. That doesn't mean they have to be, in power forever. It doesn't mean that you have to love them or trust them or anything else. You don't love them and you don't trust them, but you can work with them. And
And
if you can work
also
with them.
just the flip side of that is like, okay, if it's not, who's going to be the good person in Venezuela you're going to work with?
Right. So Ed, there's an endless series of Juan Guaidos being, because at the end of the day, is Trump really fighting the British in Venezuela or is he fighting his own CIA?
Exactly. That's exactly it. So.
So we have rogue elements of the CIA still running around the world, in cahoots with British MI6 and the Mossad and everybody else, and probably remnants of the China, some of the rogue elements in Chinese intelligence and this one's intelligence and Russian, and like everybody's like dirty on this shit. So at some point you just stop trying to make everything fit into an if not a then B false dyad, and start thinking about it as how can we get towards a better outcome. But the process is what's important. Everybody, as my friend Hall of the English likes to say, everybody likes to focus on outcomes because that's how we've been trained to think. When we should be thinking about is process. How do we get to the outcome that we want? How do we get there? Can we get there? I don't know. But here are some steps that can get us close to that, and then we'll reevaluate with every step that we take along that path, as opposed to going, well, this happened, therefore. Slide, push, do the Malthusian thing, slide the push the slider all the way to the right, and the world's going to explode. I'm like, or we don't do that. Like, that's but that's the attitude, and we have to get out of that. And that's hard to sell, and that's hard for a politician like Trump to sell. That's where this kind of conversation, this kind of format, is what actually
Is
in.
needed.
Teaches people how to think differently. We have a deficit of thinking, of quality of thinking. We all do it. I do it. We all have. We all we can all get better at this stuff. It's not like I'm some fucking genius or anything. I'm just doing my best to try and improve how I see the world and how I think about the world every day. And sometimes, and I get a lot of things right. I get some things wrong. I error check. I correct. I issue a retraction, and I move on.
Yeah. And you do that. I mean, you just did this on this show. Hey, I might have been wrong on oil, Venezuelan oil. And to all my viewers and listeners, this is why I talk with you, Tom. Well, there's many reasons, and you become a friend, but is because you see the world as a game, all of us as a game. And then it's like you move the pieces around. Okay, now we're looking at a different outcome. Okay, this is, and I think you have to look at the world like a game.
You have to look at, you have to remember that if your goal is to win the game, then everybody is both a hero, victim, and villain to you at different points of the game. You can't say, like, I had a friend of mine. He's passed now, unfortunately. Good man, but oh, was he just way too, like, doggedly left brain. And he and I used to argue at the gaming table all the time that he really did believe, from a game theory perspective, that if I screw with him during a game, even if it's bad for this particular game, like he's in fourth place, he's in second place, I'm in fourth place, or he's in third place, I'm in fourth place, and he just made a move that puts me down, and I'm just going to allow that guy to win. And he did that because he reacted to me taking him down because he's ahead of me, and I was trying to push him to go after the leader in the game, right? He would then immediately react, take me out, and go, "You fucked with me, therefore you will learn that you will never fuck with me again." I'm like, "No, dude, what I'm going to learn is I'm not going to play with you anymore because you don't know how to play the game. I'm not going to take this knowledge from this game and transfer it to the next time we go to play Power Grid. I'm just going to make sure that I'm never on the same side of the board as you when we play Power Grid, because that's the only way I'm going to fucking win the game." And that doesn't win you the game. That doesn't win either of those the game. All that means is that Steven wins every fucking time. And Steven's insufferable when he wins, and he doesn't deserve to win because you're acting like an idiot because he's using your ab reaction to take me out of the game because he knows that I'm the guy that he should be most worried about. So this is not hard, dude. And I could never get it through his head. Never. I couldn't get it through his head. And he kept telling me that's games theory. I'm like, no, it's not. No, it's not. Because every game is a new,
A new game.
it's a new game. Geopolitics is the game that never ends. So yes, in that respect, he's correct. But we're not talking that. You have to be able to, like, I never, I like, dude, I'm going, yeah, I screwed with you this turn. Next turn, you and I are going to be allies, and we're going to go against that guy. Like, I don't have any problem with that. Can you shut the fuck up and let's win? Now, am I talking the board to make sure that I am the guy who's going to win at the end of the game? Of course I
Of
am.
course, but we all
So
are.
don't listen to the last 10% of me trying to sell you on that. That's the part you're not gonna not listen to. But the first 90%, I always told everybody, that was my secret. That's my secret of the table, by the way. I always tell everybody what their best move is. And then they can't argue with me. Like, God damn it, he's right about that. I'm like, but you have to do it now. But you're gonna be advantaged by that. Yeah, did you not think I didn't put myself in the position? What do you think? I am dumb? Like, that's the way I play, is to do this. Like, what do you think I am? Stupid? I'm like, whatever. So it's a hilarious scenario, but you know, when you get really competitive, really, really intelligent people at the table playing, when you got one dimensional thinkers like my former friend, and you've got two or three dimensional thinkers at the table, you know, games like that don't work. They just don't. Everybody has to be playing at the same level for that game to have a satisfying outcome for everybody, so that whoever wins, you can look at each other in the end of the day and go, "Well done. That was well done, dude. Nicely done. Let's go smoke a cigar. Let's go have a drink. You know what I mean? And let's talk about how you did it." Right.
Well,
But
speaking of which, give your Patreon and your site here so people can support you. And I'm to all my viewers and listeners, I'm a proud Patreon of Tom's, very proud and very happy to do that. But go ahead and give that to me, and I
oops.
hope to smoke a cigar with you and have some drinks with you soon.
Yeah, that'd be fun. It would be fun. We were talking about that before we hit record tonight. Patreon/GoldGoatsAndGuns, $4 for the market reports, and server access, and $12 a month for the newsletter with a portfolio, and all the looking ahead commentary that myself and Dexter White do on a regular basis. And of course, you can just follow me on Twitter. It's TFL1728. The podcast and the newsletters are always posted on the site over at Homoluongo.me. So if you're interested in, my incredibly geeky podcast where shit like this is, happens all the time, then, great. Because what I like to do in that podcast is do as much signal as possible and don't do a lot of them, and let you chew on that one for a couple of weeks before I put out the next one. That's kind of the model. So there you go.
Thanks, Tom. And again, to all my viewers and listeners, Tom and I were talking about meeting ups between us, and we live relatively close and doing a live or an in-person show. I look forward to that happening, Tom.
That would be great.
All right.
I'd love to do it. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.